Blog Talk Radio.
Appreciate each and every one of you, and you know, thank you for the support, thank you for the motivation and the encouragement. I have had the pleasure of encountering some beautiful people in this community, and you know, the majority of them I've never met nor talked to, but you know, they've been a little note here and there, so thank you, I appreciate it. And we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. Again, we want you to think and live for yourself. We're not trying to convert your ideology, your system of belief, your thought process, none of that. We want you to evolve and grow as an individual and to come to some realizations and some, you know, come to reality and see some things on your own. All we're trying to do is present some facts, present some evidence, and what you do with it from there is entirely upon you, but you can never say that you weren't told. You know, we make sure we put the information out there, we put the links up, and we're open to questions, even though past few weeks I've been really bad about that email and also taking calls. I just haven't been there. But, you know, again, you know, you have several people. Stay with me now. It's William. Welcome, William.
Hey, I'm still active. I'm still here. I run my Sundays extra fast so I can get on this thing by 1 p.m. Eastern time. I want to be on the show. And if you want to be on the show, you can get in with 310-982-4273, and then you're going to hear that really cool British accent tell you that you can press 1 to join in.
Excellent, and that is how that goes. William, he and Alfred, they'll be starting their show next January, The Barbershop, and that information is forthcoming, but it will be a biweekly show, so every other week. And it should be a lot of fun. It should be a lot of fun. We're really looking forward to it. And we already have someone called with their hand up. And we haven't even gotten into the topics yet. You know, I want to talk about a few things on the news, a few things that I've seen this week. But before we start, is this Julie?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Julie, how are you?
I'm feeling so much better now that I can talk.
Well, welcome, Judy. Judy is one of our researchers, and we love Judy to pieces. We love Judy to pieces. Judy is, you know, an integral part of the show, and, you know, we love her, and we thank her for all the help and assistance and the work that she does with us. And all that good fun stuff. Judy, how you doing?
Pretty good. Just really stoked to be back in the swing of things.
Yeah, and we're happy to have you back. And you and I, we need to chat. I'll be giving you a call probably after the show. But
Okay.
So, you know, in the news, what's been happening? It's been a lot of things happening that, you know, I think that we actually really need to talk about. Hi, Mario. I see you out there. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about, I want to make sure that we don't forget what's just happened to Jordan Davis. It's like the Trayvon Martin Part 2. And I want to make sure everybody knows about this particular case of Jordan Davis. Basically, you know, he and his father and some friends, they went shopping in Florida. Now, they're from Georgia. They went down to Florida to do some shopping, I guess, for like that Black Friday or what have you. And they were stopped at a convenience store, I guess, to pick up some gas or food or whatever. But they were at the convenience store, and I guess they had the music up on their, you know, in the car. And this guy, you know, this gentleman, decided that their music was too loud and basically, you know, picked an argument with them. And they apparently were going back and forth, and he just took out his handgun. And I think he shot like 7 or 8 bullets in the car, killing Jordan Davis. And then he and his girlfriend sped off. And he's a software engineer, and I forget what his girlfriend did. But they're trying to use the Stand Your Ground law, or, you know, as a defense. And, you know, now sentiment is growing that, you know, Stand Your Ground needs to be repealed. Now, people had already been protesting it, but now with this particular murder, they are protesting it even more. And, you know, there are a lot of celebrities, a lot of people out here now that are, you know, coming basically on the scene and supporting Jordan Davis' family because, you know, this was uncalled for. There was no reason for them to, you know, kill this young man. And so I just
gun violence should never really be the solution to disputes that should be handled by verbally speaking to one another. And besides, the Second Amendment was only for a free militia, but we don't really have the need of a militia since we have all the armed services people can join. So in essence, the Second Amendment is no justification for the Stand Your Ground law.
Exactly. And but people are using the Stand Your Ground law to justify, you know, killing other people. You know, in some cases, you are defending yourself. You are standing your ground. Instead of retreating, you're standing your ground. And, you know, you will defend your honor, defend yourself. That's different. But this gentleman here, he just saw some kids in the car, and he claimed that someone pointed a gun at him. And no weapons were found in that vehicle. He claimed that they sped off because he feared that they would come back and try to do harm to him. And, you know, it's unreal. It's unreal what's happening. We have to do something about this, you know. So there are a lot of people protesting this particular death and this issue and the standard ground law. And Judy is right. You know, there's really, you know, no justification for this. And so, you know, I just wanted to bring that to the forefront so people could see and hear about what's happening. So, again, keep Jordan Davis in your thoughts, and also another person that I would say to keep in your thoughts, James Anderson and his family. James Anderson was killed in 2011 in Jackson, Mississippi, and apparently, you know, a group of seven white youth wanted to go fuck with some N-words, niggers, and they saw him. He was standing alone in some lot, and I think it was about 3-4 in the morning, something to that effect. And they killed him. They beat him, and they ran over him with a truck. And Daryl Bedman from Brandon, Mississippi, I believe he was sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms. You know, and it's just interesting. But he says now that he's a changed man because he's found religion. And I just say to that, you know, you pay attention to what's been happening in the media, you know, especially with the advent of the internet and everybody having access to all of these news stores. A bunch of violence and murder attributed to religion. But in addition to that, you know, a lot of reformed or so-called reformed religious people are committing, you know, crime. And, you know, and I mean, it doesn't mean that they're the only ones committing crimes. You know, there are a bunch of crimes being committed by, you know, several people in several different instances. But I don't know. You know, stop hiding behind a religion. And, you know, I say the same thing to atheists and free thinkers. Stop hiding behind atheism and free thinking and free thought. You know, it does not give you a license to do whatever it is you want to do. And that works on both sides of the equation. Religion does not give you a license to justify bad behavior with scriptures, and being an atheist or a free thinker does not authorize you to go out and just do anything and everything you want and then claim that it's free thought. No, that's not how that works. We have laws for a reason. So, you know, it's just interesting, you know, what's been going on and what's been happening, you know, even with the gentleman that killed his girlfriend, you know, a football player down there in Kansas City. You know, we definitely need to address domestic violence. You know, we need to address it. We need to look at it in totality, and not just domestic violence against women, but there is also domestic violence against men.
The ironic thing about that football player in Kansas, though, he was a big supporter of domestic violence and promoting the agenda to bring more light to it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. So it's just the whole thing, you know, it's just interesting, you know, just that twist of that situation right there. They had a 3-month-old baby, and, you know, he didn't kill his mother, you know, because his mother was at the house. I don't know. I just find the whole situation, you know, very saddening. And I wish both of their families the very best, as well as the family of Jordan Davis and Mr. James Anderson as well, because it's just a bunch of senseless violence. And I've never really understood that, but it's been happening across the board. I think we have Deborah on the line with us. Is that you, Deborah?
Uh-oh. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. We can hear you
now. Okay. Okay, how y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Fine.
Yes, ma'am. But, you know, we were just talking about some stories in the news. And, yeah, the Supreme Court, you know, switching on you guys a little bit, the Supreme Court decided to take 2 cases on marriage equality. So it should be interesting next year, you know, if they review these cases and when, you know, the verdict finally comes down. It should be very interesting. As I stated before, you know, my stance on this, my personal stance is, you know, everybody should be afforded civil union, you know, hetero couples, gay couples, just civil union across the board, and marriage should be filled by church. But again, you know, there are gay affirming churches out there that will issue a marriage certificate as well. But since religious people seem to be harping on the word marriage, I believe that will clear that up if we just, like I said, invoke civil union across the board for everyone. and then let the religious institutions issue a marriage certificate. But again, you know, you have, you know, MCC churches, UU churches that are gay affirming, and getting a marriage certificate would not necessarily be an issue or a hindrance for, you know, gay couples. We have Mario on the line as well. Hey, Mario, how you doing?
I'm all right. Hey, how y'all doing?
Good. Good, good, good. So, you know, we're just talking about a few things in the news, a few things that have been happening. You know, I just wanted to kind of bring that up so people could kind of get an idea as to, you know, what's been happening in the news, what's happening in the communities just in general. But, you know, there was a twist of fate, you know, in the past week, and I just thought it was interesting. it kind of threw me for a loop. Pat Robertson dispelled the creationist idea that the Earth is 6,000 years old.
That motherfucker.
Well, he's also for miracle, medical marijuana, too.
You know, I think, well, we won't, I won't even say what I think, you know, what Pat needs, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, he basically, you know, they say he stunned many of his viewers on, you know, when he made the announcement that he said that Christians should not cover up scientific evidence that shows Earth to be much, much older. And so I just thought that was interesting because, you know, it came in response to one of his viewers who had written into the show and was saying that, you know, her biggest fear is to not have her child or her children and husband next to her in God's kingdom because they question why the Bible could not explain the existence of dinosaurs. And so, you know.
So you know. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, babe. No, babe, go ahead.
No one has, that was the one of the first questions I asked when I was a kid. Because I was really, really into dinosaurs when I was growing up. And one of the first questions I had was, okay, I'm looking at my book of Bible stories. I'm seeing two white people, you know what I'm saying, named Adam and Eve, you know what I'm saying? My second question after asking how did the dinosaurs come about was, well, how did you get the Asians and black people and all kinds of stuff and just these two white people? But anyway, and so no one was able to answer any of those questions. No, it's almost that they never considered the question itself. And I'm thinking, well, if this is day one, and the Bible doesn't explain anything else about dinosaurs, there had to have been plenty of other days before that, and it just, either they didn't know about it, or they simply did not care, and you just don't care to ask the question, and since I'm asking it, I just completely stumped you. And
right.
It was a trip.
Yeah, they were too busy trying to get women under control to think about dinosaurs when they were in those old Abrahamic times. And the problem with trying to go to the Bible for really answers for anything is that it's way too old of a newspaper. I'm not going to get any news on 9/11 from a newspaper clipping from 1998. They're going backwards.
Right. Exactly. You know, and you know, I just found it interesting because Pat Robertson, you know, was talking about Bishop James Usher, and you know, basically here an article says, and I quote Pat Robertson, it says, "Look, I know that people will probably try to lynch me when I say this, but Bishop James Usher wasn't inspired by the Lord when he said that it all took 6,000 years." It just didn't. You go back in time, you got radiocarbon dating, you got all these things, and you've got the carcasses, dinosaurs, frozen in time out in the Dakotas. They're out there. So there was a time when these giant reptiles were on the earth, and it was before the time of the Bible. So don't try and cover it up and make like everything was 6,000 years. That's not the Bible. How about that?
Damn, Pat Robinson said something that made sense. The world must really be about to end.
Right.
I mean, December 21st is all over.
Exactly.
He's trying to get his soul right.
Yeah,
or he's just losing his basic audience and he has to update himself.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think what he's trying to do is he's trying to basically attract, you know, a new audience base, you know, or add on this audience base. And that would be, you know, if I posted, you know, a link to an article about atheist Christians. It's just, the whole thing is just interesting. But, you know, he's trying to attract more people. So I think he's trying to attract some free thinkers, some open-minded people, some of the spiritual people, or whatever, his audience base. And, you know, this is one of the ways that, you know, he's doing that, which is interesting. But, you know, this should cause a nice little rift in his community, because I'm sure that there are some people in his, you know, audience base that are not real happy by the fact that he is acknowledging science, you know. And, you know, it's just interesting. But I would just tell you guys, don't fall for the Okie doke. Do not fall for the Okie doke.
That's right.
Man, I think anybody in any form of media trying to sell any sort of philosophy is going to have a harder time with every newer generation, because every new group of people is going to have had the access to the internet in their lives longer, you know, so they have more access to information and debunking and arguments against whatever it is you're saying, whether you're on the free thought side or you're on the dogmatic religious side. You're going to have a harder time bringing in new people, because they can always go Google an argument against whatever you said.
Okay.
Right. Right. You know, and when I go to, you know, these museums of natural history, and I see artifacts, I'm looking at something that was held by somebody that existed before Rome, before any other civilization we knew about. And you can clearly see, I mean, that this person or this culture, you know what I'm saying, Tarkana boy or Lucy or somebody like that, you can clearly see that this thing existed tens or hundreds of thousands of years ago. And then for somebody who's like, no, it's only 6,000 years. Trust me on that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I just find that to be ludicrous. I mean, they have evidence that the Native Americans crossed into North America almost 20,000 years ago and have no evidence that Moses was ever lost in the wilderness, and I'm supposed to believe the Bible.
Right. Exactly. And that's why, you know, I use the story of Pat Robinson to, you know, segue into, you know, about the story of the Exodus and why we, you know, have our series today, which is part four of our biblical series, talking about Moses and the Exodus. Did Moses really exist? Did the Exodus ever happen? And to make a long story short, for those who want quick and sweet, no, he never existed, and no, it never happened, okay? So let's go ahead and get that out of the way real quick. But there are some people out there, you know, maybe you are, maybe you aren't familiar with the story of the Exodus and, you know, and how you could not be, I am not sure. Because basically, especially in Jewish culture and in Christian cultures, but particularly in Jewish culture, it is a mitzvah, it is a commandment to teach about the Exodus. And so, basically, the story is that many Jews or Israelites moved to Egypt because of the famine in their land of Canaan. And basically, they grew so large that the Pharaoh got upset because there was too many of them, you know, thinking that his government was going to be overthrown. And so he put them under enslavement. And basically, Moses was, you know, put in a basket, sent away because of the threat of the killing of the boys, or male children, and an Egyptian woman came across the basket and took Moses and raised him as her own. You know, we all know how this story goes. And basically, Moses found out.
Well, there's a lot of problems with the baby issue itself. If she was royalty of the Egyptian court and found this random baby, she obviously didn't give birth to, that would have been a red flag. Okay, where did she get this child?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlton Heston is not Egyptian looking, so.
Exactly. You know, where did she get this child? Where did it come from? No one ever questioned that, you know, which is, you know, quite interesting, because it's just interesting because I'm sure that, you know, she was a very petite woman. You know, I don't know how many petite women hold their shape when they're pregnant, especially with a big boy like Moses, right? And so, you know, the whole thing is just interesting. But basically, Moses learned of his heritage, found out that he came from the slaves, and he rose up. And basically, from his leadership, from Moses' leadership, the Israelites departed Egypt. And that's pretty much, you know, what, you know, it says happened. And so, you know, the whole thing is interesting. But the question has always been, how many Israelites were there? You know, and, you know, apparently in Numbers 1 to 46, you know, God asked Moses to carry out a census, if you will. And so it gave the numbers, you know, a calculation of the numbers. And basically it says that, you know, 600,000, you know, men and 3,550 children, I guess. And so because adulthood started at 14. So a total of 603,550 men with attendant women and kiddies. So, you know, it could have been around 2 million people, it says. And that's the reason why people find it hard to believe, because there is no archaeological or documentation to back up these assumptions. So that's
been part of... Could you imagine if some industry here had 2 million workers suddenly drop out, what that would do to the local economy? I think that would be noticed, and Egypt would have been in a major downswing if they depended on that many workers.
Exactly. You know, and the whole thing, like I said, you know, it's interesting because they make it seem as though, you know, first of all, let's just say hypothetical. I'm going to put it in a hypothetical situation. If this were to ever had happened, which I doubt, that was not a large kingdom. It was probably a small tribe. A small tribe with an exaggerated story. With, you know, a narrative that somebody blew totally out of proportion. But no slaves, you know, escaped. Because, I mean, one thing I will say about the Egyptians is that they recorded history, whether it was favorable to them or not.
Yeah.
And even though it would not have been favorable for them to tell the story, how they lost an entire brigade chasing runaway slaves through the fleet. You know, but they would have written it down. They would have told the story. So, you know, the whole thing is interesting about how that, you know, came about. And even when you start talking about the Torah, you know, you start talking about the Pentateuch, you know, the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. If you go back, and, you know, for those that want to do more in-depth research on this, I would just tell you to look up the documentary hypothesis as well as Wellhausen's formulation. So Wellhausen, W-E-L-L-H-A-U-S-E-N, Wellhausen's formulation and the documentary hypothesis. And you will get some more information as to how the original Torah was basically four different narratives. And they were complete in and of themselves, but some kind of way they were aggregated. So, you know, you go on and do some research, and you can find out, you know, how all of that, you know, anthropomorphized. And so you can find the information out. And I would recommend do some reading on that, because it's absolutely fascinating how all of that came about and, you know, what it was in response to. So, you know, it's just interesting, you know, because... I've posted articles before, and I'm going to post them more today. But basically, you know, one particular Israeli archaeologist, Ze'ev Herzog, you know, basically his statement in 1999 to the Weekly Magazine, you know, on the cover page, was deconstructing the walls of Jericho attracted considerable public attention and debate. In this article, Herzog claims that the Israelites were never in Egypt, did not wander in the desert, did not conquer the land in a military campaign, and did not pass it on to the 12 tribes of Israel. Perhaps even harder to swallow is the fact that the united monarchy of David and Solomon, which is described by the Bible as a regional power, was at most a small tribal kingdom, and it will come as an unpleasant shock to many that the God of Israel, Jehovah, had a female consort, Asherah, and that the early Israelite religion adopted monotheism only in the waning period, 920 through 900 B.C., of the monarchy, and not at Mount Sinai. Mm-hmm. Now, how about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think it's interesting, you know, it's being debunked left and right.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, yeah.
And you know what else is interesting? The word amen.
Oh, yeah.
Where that came from. You understand? You
yeah.
Wonder, you little tidbits. That's why I started out studying the Bible, because you know when you steal some, you always leave little crumbs, and it's tidbits all through the Bible that tells you if something's a little off.
right, yeah. You know, and it's just interesting, you know, how all of that, you know, came about. And, you know, again, their own academics are disputing this, you know.
Right.
There's even an article in Christianity Today, which I will post, and, you know, it talks about how, basically how two Egyptologists are countering scholars who want to turn the Old Testament into myth. And basically, many scholars, you know, Christian and non-Christian, they are acknowledging that, you know, it never happened. And that basically it was just, encouraging stories. Go ahead, dear.
Well, I crack up, you know, because you know me, I tend to sit here and think about a lot of stuff too much sometimes. And so I remember getting into a discussion with someone concerning the whole thing, and we was talking about the Bible, and they tell me about like how you know all the little parlor tricks that Moses had to do to get Pharaoh to agree to it, and everything. I think it's kind of cold blooded now that you go into these people's places. First of all, why would if the Egyptians were enslaved and they're his people, why are they enslaved now anyway? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it seemed like he kind of let that shit happen. And then you go in, you send this one dude in there. You're a god. You could have nipped this in the bud in an instant, but you send this one dude, and you take time having him perform all these magic tricks, including killing the firstborns of the Egyptians. Like that's supposed to be the proper way to handle warfare and everything. Everybody's okay with that. All the Christians are okay with the fact that he just summarily killed. It doesn't matter if the kid was day one or 19 years old. He just killed these people, these kids, just to show, hey, I got the power to kill you. Now let these people go. So I asked the question, why the hell didn't he just kill the Pharaoh and all his army? That way they wouldn't have had to leave. They could have just took over the area they was already in the first place.
Because God's an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I'm like, think about that. I mean, it's not really an inspiring story when you consider how convoluted and ridiculous it has to be in order to work out. You could have just killed everybody who's already there and saved yourself 50 years of trouble.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. No, I mean, but you're correct. You know, but again, you know, there is strength in numbers. And, yes, they outnumber, you know, the Pharaoh and his court. However, think about, you know, what's happening in modern-day times. There are enough of us that we can overpower certain people. So that's one of the reasons why the Bible comes in. I'm not sure what the hell is going on back there. You're breathing kind of hard into the phone. But basically, look at the numbers now. Look at the numbers now with the government, and look at the numbers now. And that's the reason why religion and politics, you know, go hand in hand. Because as long as they can manipulate people and control them with religion, and they, you know, filter in quite a bit of politics into religion. That's the reason
which
why
is why Israel is just ousted all the Palestinians from their own area, and the U.S. commits the essential genocide of the people who are there just to force Israelites, so-called, into that area.
Yes, modern-day apartheid was happening over there. You know, it's interesting. And, yeah, you know, the Palestinians just received their statehood. Palestinians received their statehood that UN recognized. And so, you know, I thought it was interesting how the United States voted against it. And, of course, you know, Great Britain or the UK, they voted against it. And, you know, several other places that they didn't vote against. Well, I'm talking about, you know, a more Western mindset, you know, in Western countries. If they didn't vote against it, they got sanctioned. Which is, you know, interesting in and of itself. But, you know, guys, it's a lot of things happening. But, yeah, you know, that's how they control people. They are controlling them with the Bible and these stories. And that's the reason why free thought community, even though we're rising, you know, we're somewhat of a threat. Because, basically, you know, we're telling people this never happened. And people are starting to wake up. And with the advent of the internet, we're able to put the information out there. I've seen quite a few people, you know, and again, you know, we're not here trying to convert anybody. We're just presenting facts, we're presenting evidence. You do with it as you wish, as you please. But information.
Well, throughout history, intellectuals have always been denounced because that poses a threat to the status quo. Anyone who questions it and looks into it intellectually, that raises too much doubt to the authorities or power that be. So if you even doubt what's being told to you, then there's something wrong with you.
Of course.
The story of Galileo will tell you that. How they did him when he was coming up with all the, when he was trying to prove, I think he was trying to prove the
Earth was
a lot of things.
Ground and stuff,
And they either he got tortured or they were going to torture him if he didn't recant it or something. I can't remember exactly, but
was put in jail too. I think he died in jail, didn't he?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, that was
exactly. Yeah, no, it's interesting, you know. Cause, I mean, I just posted in the room as well as on Facebook and Twitter an article from MSA.gov, and basically, this is, you know, Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And even they admit, you know, they're talking about the myth and the reality of King David in Jerusalem. And, you know, it's talking about, you know, corroborating evidence and how, you know, it doesn't really, or they say some exist, but it's not conclusive. Well, if it's not conclusive, you can't necessarily say that it exists. You know, and so I just think it's important for people to understand that. But, yeah, they've done plenty of excavations in the city of David and, you know, a number of different places, but they have not been able to, you know, retain any type of conclusive evidence to prove that King David existed and, you know, what happened and the magnitude of what's being claimed, you know. And it's just interesting because, you know, we need to share that information with other people. And even here in the article it says, the Bible is not and was never intended to be a historical document.
No.
A work of theology, law, ethics, and literature. It does contain some historical information, But if we want to evaluate this information, we consider when, how, and why the Bible was compiled. So, I mean, there's a lot of doubt even on their behalf, you know. And again, you know, they don't have a lot of conclusive or any conclusive evidence, you know. So, you know, I just want you guys to take a look at that and to see as to what's happening. because, you know, even here it quotes the age of reason, you know, and how scholars began subjecting the Bible text to linguistic, textual, and literary analysis. And they started noting the inconsistencies in erupted riffraff. Now, to go back to the show that I did, the last biblical show, Did Jesus Exist? You know, I talked about of this. And, you know, it's the reason why I'm putting the shows in order. But I want you to go back and listen to the shows and find it in archives, part one, part two, and part three. And then part four will be done when we're done with this show. But, you know, again, I want you guys to go and look this information up. We're putting it out there. But, yeah, the Bible was never meant to be a historical document. And that's the reason why, you know, we always say, you know, talk about the circular argument and the straw man argument that a lot of believers put up when we tell them to offer us proof and evidence, but they cannot use the Bible as such. And that goes back to the show, the last show, part three, when I was talking about Flavius Josephus, or Josephus, depending on how you pronounce that, but Flavius, and how, you know, the information that was entered into those particular books or scribes, how it was fraudulent. It was proven to be fraudulent and added, you know, after, you know, the book had been written by some scribes. So, you know, you got to know the history. You got to know the history. You got to go back and read up about what's happening. But, you know, one article that I love to post, which I'm getting ready to post again, but it was basically printed in the Los Angeles Times. And this was in 2001. And basically, you know, here it was talking about how a rabbi got in front of his congregation, about 2,200 people, at Sinai Temple in Westwood. And basically he said, the truth is that virtually every modern archaeologist who has investigated the story of the Exodus, with very few exceptions, agrees that the way the Bible describes the Exodus is not the way it happened, if it happened at all. And so basically, yeah, the congregation found his sermon startling, of course. And, you know, I'm sure he was, you know, accused of blasphemy. And but it has to come out. You know, they can't continue lying to these people. But at the end of the day, you know, again, something that we've talked about, for many of these people, this is their livelihood. This is all they know. So when
their
people
whole
are
life.
In,
their
right.
whole life. Everything is dependent on what they believe in that Bible. Everything.
Right, right. You know, it, to me, it's even more horrific to imagine that the story did actually happen. Not only did you have God intentionally killing children, to prove a point, but not anybody who would actually affect the outcome of what he was trying to accomplish. You're trying to free your people, yet you kill people who have nothing to do with that, whether or not they would be freed or not. And you allow the Pharaoh to live, only to kill him in the ocean when you could have killed him a few days ago and saved yourself trouble. Then you take these people off into the wilderness, off into to near the mountain where he gets these stone tablets, because nobody, because God can't just write some shit down on paper and everything. And so during that point in time, these people decide to create their own God, you know what I'm saying, on the spot and worship it. To me, if you just created your God 5 minutes ago, you know it's bullshit, so that doesn't make sense. But then on top of that, Moses comes down the mountain pissed off, hurls the stone tablets he went up there to get that God gave him, because they don't really mean that much, I guess. And then on top of that, kills 3,000 of the people he was supposed to save. Right? Now, if you think about how that works out, that's the stupidest, horrific story you've ever heard of.
That's right.
A SWAT team goes in to rescue 200 hostages, and they kill 75 of them. That's a failed rescue.
Yeah.
Nah, because you got to thank God for the 25 that survived. Either that, or just their God keeps it that gangster. I don't know. He keeps it real like that. He'll put in work if work needs to be put in. He should have been cast in Menace to Society or something. And I was looking up this.
You know what really freaks me out is, how do they explain a God who allows children what really got to me was when the Sandy, with the Sandy thing. Do you remember the story about the lady up in New York, and it was flooding, and her two children were in the car? Did you hear about that?
Oh yeah.
And they died. I mean, just think about it.
That dude wouldn't let them in.
Where was God? I mean, how do they explain the stuff that's happening now? How can they not see? I don't understand that. All these little children that haven't did anything to nobody. You know, they had
when
Sandy first started, like down in Haiti. One child was crushed down in Haiti. The wall just fell on them. How do they explain a God that would allow that?
According to Leviticus, the life of a baby or a child, or a child in the womb even, doesn't actually have that much value, which is why the whole abortion argument is hogwash.
Exactly.
But the value of killing the woman carrying the child is more than the value of the child inside her.
Exactly. And see, that's the thing right there. And I have to find that article. I have it up here somewhere. But basically, yes, you know, and Judy is right. You know, it's like cognitive dissonance there. You know, there the abortion argument is at conception that is a human being, that is a child.
That's ego talking.
Exactly. But after that child is born, you know, after the woman gives birth to that child, then they stop caring about that child. They don't want to give it health care. They don't want to give it an education. They don't want to give it, you know, anything. So why is it that that child is more valuable in the womb than it is outside the womb? But then to tie that in, I guess the question is that, you know, again, I've talked about different things, and basically it's because they want more children born. They want, you know, big families. They want huge families. Why? Because the more children that some people have, not all people, but some people have, it is almost a guarantee that they will be living at or below the poverty line, which leads into issues of desperation, if you will, and poverty, and people wanting some type of help, and people wanting a better life for themselves and not necessarily understanding what's happening around them. And many of them turn to religion. And again, it's a perpetual cycle. It's like, you know, you see these pastors appointing their children, their grandchildren to, you know, lead their particular congregations. It's like their own little dynasties and, you know, fiefdoms here on earth. And it's a business. It's a business model. The more children a person has, and especially if that child was raised in a church or the children are raised in a church, more than likely they're going to stay there and bring their children in. And then they're being told that they have to give tithing and offering and be a willing worker, which is next to being an indentured servant because you're working for free. And it's just, it's interesting. But it's keep people in those pews, keep those pew seats warm. But in addition to that, you know, to keep the money coming in so that, you know, those people don't have to work. They don't work for a living. So, you know, the whole thing is just interesting.
I think it also builds the tribe. It builds the culture. Like, they have the money coming in, and they have another member of the gang, somebody else who's on their squad, who's on their team. So, like, yeah, us, the Lutherans over here, we produce 30,000 babies this year, and you Catholics, you only produce 25,000. Ha-ha, our gang is getting bigger. And then, like you could say, the privatized prisons, they're going to want, like you said, more kids in poverty coming in. So I know you've probably seen those news clips in Mississippi and in Arizona where the privatized prisons, not police, not FBI, they're going in there and they're just, they had all the kids go out in the hallway and just check them. You got a little bag of reefer on you, son? Bang, off into the criminal system. You know, and then snag them in there. Or Walmart. They want more workers.
I just also think I have to ask why now. You know, what's it called? Parenthood. I can't even think. Been going on for so long, and as long as it was like a black thing, it was cool. I think they just realized that we're not the minority anymore, and you have a lot of white women going to those places getting abortions. I just have to think, why now, you know? And I think it's because, yeah, we're not the minority anymore. They are.
Well, you know, it goes even beyond that, you know, beyond who's a minority or how the events have turned. It goes back into, you know, they have people procreating or producing children that they don't necessarily want or that they can't afford, you know, just so that they can continue on, you know, being the hirelings that they are, and so that their family, you know, because, I mean, there's a scripture in the Bible that says, you know, your children and your children's children, and it tells them how, you know, to acquire wealth and keep wealth, but to acquire enough wealth so that your children and your children's children will be taken care of. And, you know, part of that is, you know, with the church building and, you know, the congregation building. But, you know, what William said was absolutely correct, because it is, it turns into a competition for some of these churches. Who has the most members? Who collects the most money? Who has the best toys? So what type of jet do you have? It went from having a Mercedes and a Jaguar to having, you know, a Maybach or a Rolls Royce or a Bentley. Now it's, you know, what type of jets and how many churches do you have and how many cities and how many states and how many banks you own, because, you know, a lot of churches, they're opening up their own credit unions and banks.
Right.
So, you know, it's turned into a big money state. But, you know, kind of tying all of that back into, you know, the subject matter here is basically, you know, even back then, in one of these articles here, it talks about how the average family had 7 children. That's a lot of kids or slaves.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think about the state of, you know, poverty and, you know, different families, and, you know, especially in particular the United States, you know, both black and white, you know, some of the poorer families, they have the most children. And, you know, the question is why? And, you know, William, you know, hit on it when he was talking about the prison system, you know, which we'll be addressing that next year. We'll be talking about Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow. But, you know, that's absolutely correct about how the prisons have been privatized. And in many cases, a lot of these poor kids don't have a choice. You either go to prison or you go to the military or you open a church. Okay, you know, a few of them escape and go to church. I mean, a few of them escape and go to college and are able to build, you know, a life outside of that. But, I mean, I know people with master's and doctorate degrees that, you know, are serving it up at McDonald's. So, you know, an education isn't necessarily the answer to it, you know, either. And, you know, in many cases, it's about who you know, not necessarily what you know. I'm going back to the article that I posted a minute ago from the LA Times. You know, one of the quotes is from William Deaver, and he's a professor of Near Eastern archaeology. I quoted him a little earlier, and he's at the University of Arizona. And basically he said that scholars have known these things for a long time, but we've broken the news very gently. And so, you know, it's just interesting, you know, how all of this is working out. And The Bible Unearthed is a book that was written by an Israeli archaeologist, Israel Finkelstein, of Tel Aviv University. And basically it tells you about similar doubts and tells you about the root of the Exodus story and about how the authors argue that the story was written during the time of King Josiah of Judah in the 7th century B.C., and 600 years after the Exodus supposedly occurred. And basically it was a political manifesto to unite Israelites against the rival Egyptian empire as both states sought to expand their territory. So, you know, it's just interesting, you know, how all of this came about. You know, I have several more, you know, articles out here as to, you know, where all of this came about. But, you know, we're basically here, we're trying to present evidence to people. And again, read these links, and within these links contain other links. You know, question it, question everything, research everything you say. But I believe that we can stand on confidence about what we're telling you, because we're not just making this up. The evidence shows that this never occurred. And we just want you to think and start questioning And, you know, this is where the conundrum comes in, if you will. Basically, they're taught not to question God ever, not to question the Bible, not to question their pastor or their parents. And so basically, you know, they're painted into a corner, many of these young people, because you start questioning these things when you're younger. At least that was in my case. I was questioning this stuff at 10, 11, 12 years of age. What
yeah.
about the rest of the class?
Yeah. That's right.
And I'm looking at what Nate R. put in there, like, how do we deliver this? Do we be, like, smooth about it, or do we be abrupt? I think, like, it's good that we have so many outlets to where we can deliver these sort of news things, because Kim is very smooth. Like, I can listen to this, and it's easy to take in, and I know that somebody else that's on an opposing side, they could take it in, and they feel like they're not being attacked. And then, like me, I'm not very smooth verbally. I just end up blurting it out, just, everything's terrible. So I might have to reach for a different audience.
Well,
yeah, I was
you know,
scared of that. I really
I had to bar.
I was just saying, I stopped because I was afraid. Some people are so into religion, it's like if you take the idea away from them, I'm afraid some of these people might commit murder. You know, it's just, they're so, I don't know, hooked, addicted, whatever. For them not to see what's happening, they got to be addicted. You know, it's really scary, you know. It's scary. Sometimes I look at people, I say, what the hell? How could they think? Why don't they just think for themselves? It's weird to me.
Right.
It gets interesting.
Go ahead, Mario. Go ahead,
honey.
Oh, Will.
Oh, that was me. I was like, yeah, they get bred into it, man. And I couldn't imagine. Like, I might be like that too if they put that in my head from childhood forward. You know, like
mm-hmm.
I could probably be the exact same way. I don't know. I might not get out because.
But
I don't know. Like,
I was born. I always like to say I was born in church. You know, I mean, I got baptized. I knew it was something weird, though, you know, when I was young. I was baptized when I was 8 years old, and then I got baptized again when I went back to church around 25. And I was trying to get into it then, you know, because I had defunct it when I was 18. And I got baptized to get my kids baptized, and also to say that when you get baptized at 8, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. So, but it's still, it just was too many questions. I mean, I just don't understand how, and then they don't want to answer no questions. That pissed me off. So, you know, that's how I got there, you know. I mean, just studying the Bible, you can't help but have questions. I just don't understand.
Right,
you know,
go ahead, Mario. Go ahead.
That reminds me that I remember that story, the Moses' tale ending, with him being told by God to climb the mountain and look over into the promised land, and said that he died on the mountain, and the reason is somehow he wouldn't be allowed to see the promised land or whatever, because he had nutted up and said that he had did something that God had did or something like that. I can't remember the exact story, but y'all know what I'm talking about. And
right, right.
I remember reading that, and I'm saying, that's cold-blooded. This dude just went through 50 years of bullshit for you. I'm like, that's why. That's what you pissed off about? I mean, come on. I'm like, and so that was one reason why I can't get into God seemed like such a bitch to me, man. Because everybody looked around. I'm sorry, but he just seemed, that's probably the wrong term, but, you know, he just seemed like such a crybaby. You know what I'm saying? I'm an immortal power that created you. You said you did something I did. You know what I'm saying? That hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
I really crack up on that stuff.
And you know what,
right.
Mario, I think that shows you the type of man who created God in his image. That was a whiny little man that wanted things his way, that created his God like that, that said, well, my invisible friend in the sky said that. My drop-dead Fred said that's right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and
right.
At this point, let's remind them, if you're listening in, that's 310-982-4273. And then that little voice will tell you you can press 1 to speak to the host.
Yeah,
and,
I would like a good debate. You can't even debate these people. These people won't even debate. You know, a good Christian, and they won't even debate you, man. You know, they'll call you every kind of name, you know, but they won't answer your questions. Oh, it's really weird.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, it's a lot of ad hominem attacks out there, you know, because I've seen Christians do it, and I've seen, you know, free thinkers and atheists do it as well. But the thing is that that's the reason why, you know, with the information that we bring forth, that's why I encourage people to go and read it on both sides of the equation. But, you know, in particular on our side, so when we are having these conversations with people, we'll be able to present the evidence, we'll be able to present our arguments in a very, you know, cogent manner and, you know, bring it forth. Because it's like when you bring forth, you know, information, especially if you're calm and cogent about it, you know, them being hysterical or showing histrionics, I mean, it just weakens their argument. And, you know, most rational people will sit back and think about it a little bit later, and they would realize how wrong they were, not necessarily in their argument, but their reaction to it. But that's not always the case. You know, we deal with a bunch of different types of people. You know, we're not, you know, monolith. It's not homogenous in any way whatsoever. But, you know, hey, we got to move on, and we present evidence, and we keep it there. But with all of the technology that we have, you know, in which we can kind of, you know, see what's happening, you know, throughout the different layers of the earth, why is it that no evidence has been found, no archaeological evidence whatsoever? And they found evidence for cultures before that and cultures after that, but not that particular time frame. And so this is where a lot of the doubt comes in. And, you know, again, this is interesting. You know, there have been quite a few archaeologists out there trying to find information, and they haven't been able to find anything. And they're talking about the different textual mistakes of the Bible. And that's the reason why, you know, again, we're encouraging people to go out there, look it up, you know, prove us wrong, you know. The link that I'm putting up now is actually a very, very good link. I'm posting it on my Facebook. It's called Archaeology in the Exodus. And there are quite a few related articles to it. I would, you know, recommend that you read these articles as well. I'm about to put it up in the chat room. But, guys, you know, I would say that, you know, keep striving for the truth. And again, that's on both sides of the equation. Keep striving for the truth, and we'll be able to move on. And Mario, you didn't offend anybody with that term. Stop that. And you know, because everybody has a different way of expressing themselves. You know, and it's okay. You know, this is how you learn. This is how we learn. And you know, guys, information is out there. You can always talk to us, but I would just say, you know, listen to the series that, you know, we've put together. This is part 4, and, you know, this is going to continue next year as well. So this isn't necessarily going away, and even though there are some people asking why am I teaching these things or showing these things, it's important that we do that, and they'll say, well, we already know these things. Well, there may be some of you that do know this, but there are quite a few people who don't know this, and you have not always necessarily known this. Because, again, some of the articles that I'm posting, they're from 2000, 2001, and even though the Internet was around back then, you know, those search engines used to be horrible back in the day. So people did not necessarily have access to this. We have quite a few people that are, at this point in time, they are starting to wake up, and they're seeking information. They're seeking knowledge. And that's why we're putting it out here, because there are some people who aren't going to read this for a number of different reasons or read these articles, but they will listen to the show. They'll listen to what we have to say. So that's the reason why I think it's important that we put the information out there, that we embrace people, and, you know, go on from there. But, yeah, you know, it's interesting. The article that I'm getting ready to post now, it has a little excerpt in here, and it basically talks about amateur archaeologists that are pretty much funded by religious groups. Basically has given way to more objective professionals aiming to piece together the reality of ancient lifestyles. So they've been able to bring forth that evidence, but yet they still have not been able to bring forth any conclusive or definitive evidence that these Bible stories are true, that these events actually happened. And so, you know, they call it anti-Bible bias, but that's not necessarily the case. If it's not there, it's just not there. But, you know, again, we're not trying necessarily to begrudge people of their beliefs. All we're trying to say is understand that, you know, a lot of the things that you have been told are not necessarily true. And in many cases, many of these churches are nothing but social clubs. That's exactly what
it is. Having fun. A party. That's all it is.
Right.
Yeah,
I've thought about that. Like that's a good sort of dating fling circle too. If you're single and you want to get in there, man, go rock out in the church. Pentecostal church, I recommend. It's a good one. And they party in there, man. You can boogie down. Like, just fake the Holy Ghost and make up a dance.
Yeah,
that's the fantastic time.
I was always told that, man. I was always told that if you want your good woman, go to church.
Yeah,
go to church, and if you find the right church, they'll feed you for free, too. I recommend you look for both of those.
Hey, that's why I'm single now, hon. Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I don't know how reputable these people are, but the National Center for Atmospheric Research, they were looking into trying to find how possible this parting of the sea was for old Mosey Boy moving the slaves out of there. And what they did, they used 14 to 16 computer models to generate a 63 miles an hour of sustained winds digitally. And what they found was that they could bring 6 feet of water down to just, you know, some mud that they could stomp through in their old school sandals that I think they were wearing. They didn't have big boots back in those days. But what I love is at the end, like they said, yeah, it could have happened, and they could have just called it God with a strong windstorm. What I love is this guy Ken Ham, the CEO of a creationist museum in Petersburg, Kentucky, of course. And he told USA Today that the parting of the Red Sea was a miracle, and it was an extraordinary act of God, and God uses a force of nature, wind, to bring about this miracle. But there was no need to come up with a naturalistic explanation of the supernatural event. And that's just a study I found, just trying to look up stuff for the show. But I don't know how reputable that the National Center for Atmospheric Research is, and that they had to, and who knows how they set up the computers. Like, was it any good, the research they did? Did they set it up so they would win? Because it's kind of like they were playing on their own chessboard.
Did you see in there also, I read an article years ago. It wasn't supposed, it's not really the Red Sea, it's supposed to be the Reed Sea.
Yeah, I saw that today. I was looking at that. I saw the Reed Sea. They had trouble reading, maybe.
Mm-hmm. R-E-D, I think. You know, I think it's because it was a lot of reed in the sea. That's why it was called the Reed Sea. Reeds, like, what you call them? You know, reeds.
Right, and it's interesting, you know, how all of this, you know, came about. And, you know, those articles you all were talking about, I've seen those before. There was another article that basically said that it could have been a tsunami. But, you know, nothing of that magnitude was ever, you know, recorded. And, you know, if it was a tsunami,
then everybody's going on one great big roller coaster ride because, you know, if it is a tsunami opening, you know, the sea, how are you walking behind the tsunami? You should not even be able to stand up. So
yeah.
It's, you know, the whole thing, all of that is just interesting. But, again, you know, I believe it's just exaggerated claims and narratives, you know, aimed at, you know, entertaining and amusing children, but also, you know, psychological, like controlling, you know, their minds, controlling, you know, their brain. You know, and I mean, if you go back and just read some of the stuff, you know, right here in one of the articles that I just posted, New Torah for Modern Mind, it talks about the story of Noah and how it was probably borrowed from the Mesopotamian epic Gilgamesh. And, you know, just look this up, please. You know, I implore that you look this information up. You know, this stuff, most of it has been debunked. It's been debunked. And I just don't want people caught up in all of this religiosity, if you will, knowing that they're being manipulated and used by, you know, the people in power, the people, you know, over these congregations, these pastors and these priests. I mean, they've proven that they don't necessarily believe in this because look at their behavior. They're, you know, molesting and raping and killing, you know, children and other adults. And I've talked, you know, in depth on this show as to how, in some cases, how your children are groomed. And how, you know, children economically and educationally disadvantaged neighborhoods and communities, how, you know, again, they're being groomed because they want nice things. You know, they want the latest shoes. They want, you know, iPad. They want all of these things. And if they're not out here trying to rob somebody for it or steal it or, you know, what have you, you have some of these sexual predators coming into the neighborhood and say, heck, you know, I'll buy you a pair of $200 shoes or a new outfit or an iPad. But in turn, you have to have sex with me.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people are setting their children up to be hurt. Even though that's not what they're trying to do, they think they're doing the right thing, which is why I don't come down really hard on them, because many of them, they really actually think that they're doing the right thing, but you're setting your child up to be hurt. Setting your child up to be hurt. You need to know and understand what's happening. Many of these people over these congregations, they know exactly what they're doing.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, you know, one thing that it cracks me up, though, they try to cite, you know, saying stuff like talking about Moses, how God freed the Israelites from slavery and everything like that. I'm like, but that did not end slavery. There was slavery before that. There was still cultures being enslaved during that, and there was still slavery after that.
Yeah.
Slavery has affected so much of our history and our world that I'm not certain a lot of our civilizations would have been built if it hadn't been for it. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? You know, it didn't end slavery. Maybe if it happened, it freed those people, but it did not end slavery itself. So citing that as some form of inspiration is BS because, you know what I'm saying, it only helped those people if it even happened.
Right. Exactly. And, I mean, if that was slavery and it was showing how slavery was wrong and, you know, how people were being held against their will and they had this Moses or the savior figure, if you will, come in and deliver them from that situation, then how is it that they use that same Bible to justify slavery in so many different countries, including this one? So how is slavery a bad thing, but yet it's a good thing when it's happening to someone other than your particular community and culture? How does that work?
Yeah, that reminds me of a story I read in the Black Freethinkers Praxis, where you said, like,
they'll come and they're coming after your children, you know, not to quote that kid on the YouTube, but they're coming after your children with the religion to hurt them. And I read in that Black Freethinkers Praxis where the guy was talking about he's going to exorcise the demon from the girl, and part of the exorcism is he has to play the role of her husband, so the 16-year-old girl has to have sex with this guy in his 40s.
Wow.
And like they're just coming for them. So much of like most of the religions that I hear about, I don't know much about Buddhism or many of those other ones, but the ones prominent in the religion in the United States pretty much have to do with big money and lots of sexual gratification for the men.
Exactly. Everything is about the man.
Right. And that's what it boils down to, you know, the sexual gratification, the enrichment, the expanding of their territory, whether it's land, money, children, what have you. Basically, you know, that's what it's based on. And it's been happening for centuries. And but they use the Bible, they use those tales to control people. It's nothing but, you know, mass manipulation. And I always say that the cornerstones of religion are guilt, shame, and fear. You know, and you have some master manipulators here, and that's exactly what they're doing. It's just interesting, but it's not only that, you know, because over the past year and a half, we've talked about a lot of different things, but, you know, you have religion, and then you have spiritualism, if you will. And then you have your conspiracy theorists, and then usually they delve over into agnosticism. And some people stay with agnosticism, some delve over into humanism, free thought, atheism, you know, anti-theism. So you have these different categories, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, people are going to believe what they are going to believe. But what I will say is that, you know, everything needs to be examined, everything needs to be questioned. I truly, truly recommend that people just get out here. Instead of arguing about these things, let's sit down and have a conversation. But one of the issues is that when we tell them that they cannot use the Bible as a historical document, that's the sticking point in a lot of these situations, and that's why I was quoting, you know, some of these archaeologists and scholars earlier, because they definitely will tell you that the Bible was not and is not meant to be a historical document. And so that's where some of the confusion comes in. And then what happens is they introduce these other characters and say, well, you know, in this particular book, you know, they spoke about Jesus, and it's like, but it was a fraudulent entry. And, I mean, even with the story, again, going back to Moses and the Exodus, if you have 1-2 million people traveling as a group and nobody drops anything, I mean, those are some of the cleanest people ever to find that information. So, you know, when we have these festivals, we kind of train people, you know, unfortunately, it would kind of get rid of a few garbage men's jobs, but, hey, you know, you know, anything to save the government some money. But, you know, the whole thing is just interesting. But people are taught not to question. And that's the reason why when I look at these types of things, you know, and I present it, I don't present it in such a way to put it in somebody's face or to taunt anyone. I'm presenting it in such a way to show them, look, there is no evidence of this. But I'm not trying to necessarily change your mind. What I want you to do is go and research what I have to say. You know, it's okay. You know, and you have to give people enough time to kind of come to these realizations on their own. So it's just interesting. But, I mean, I've seen the growth in a lot of people. You know, I've had people ask me questions. I have people, you know, just, you know, coming into their own and thanking us for presenting information to them. And, again, our call-in number is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. And if you want to speak, press 1. feel that I don't know that you want to speak. I see several calls here, but they haven't pressed one, so I'm not going to assume. So, you know, the whole thing, like I said, you know, it's just really interesting as to how all of this came about and some of the ridiculousness of some of the claims, you know, especially the supernatural, a plague of frogs and locusts. How does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's
good. Oh, yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, even before, you know, the archaeologists came out and started presenting the evidence that it never happened, you know, you had different, you know, rabbis, priests, pastors saying that, you know, they believed that the Exodus happened. However, the supernatural parts were exaggerations. Well, if that was an exaggeration, what makes the rest of it not an exaggeration? That's something that I've never understood. If you claim and you understand that some parts of it is an exaggeration, why is it that all of it is not an exaggeration?
Exactly. They can't tell you. They don't want to do that. That would be going too far.
Right. So it's interesting, but, you know, nothing was found, no pottery. No animal bones, no human remains, nothing. No clothing, nothing. And
right.
So it's interesting because, you know, I don't know, you know, but we're presenting the information. We're telling the people to get out there, find out what's happening, and to challenge what they've been taught and, you know, what they believe. You know, if they still continue to believe, that's fine. You know, but again, you can't say that you weren't told and that someone didn't try to tell you, because I know that was one of my issues, is that, you know I stopped believing when I was younger, but as you get older and you're around religious people, they just seem like the happiest people, and just everything is great and wonderful over there. And so I wandered back over into that pasture, if you will, to see what was happening. And once I got back in there, I started being serious about, you know, worship and all of that.
Yeah.
And I was quickly brought in behind the scenes. And if I could tell you some of the behavior that I saw, some of the things that I heard, this is why I know for a fact that the majority of these people don't believe this stuff.
Right.
They don't believe this stuff. You should. See, I mean, some of these churches are like Peyton plates. They're just passing each other around, and which is, you know, interesting. You know, one day we'll talk about, I believe in this series, I may do something about Val, V-A-A-L, L, and basically how there was prostitution in the temple,
yeah.
How there used to be prostitution in the temple, in the churches, and prostitutes were male prostitutes for the most part.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll talk about that one day. A lot of this that they don't teach and that people aren't aware of. But, you know, it's important that, you know, we present it, and that, again, not only on the other side of the equation, the theists, but also the people in the free thought atheist community. Some of you guys need to read and understand some of this as well. So that when you're talking to, you know, Christians or religious, that you have a, you know, somewhat of an understanding of where they're coming from, because it's kind of hard to present an argument when you don't necessarily know or understand at least a semblance of what the other people believe and what they think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's hard to do that, you know. We can run around screaming, present us proof and evidence. But to be able to take their information and present to them in a way that makes sense, that presents a stronger argument. At least, you know, at least that's my thought on it. So, we're getting there.
I got a book that maybe y'all can help me get. The only book. Anybody has, I think it's called Coptic Ethiopian Bible. I'm not going to pay that. When I looked it up, the least I saw for it was $2,000. I ain't paying no $2,000 for a Bible. I may pay $20. But it's hard. I got books on it, But I wanted one that wasn't translated, but maybe one time into English. You know, that's the thing too. That translation thing is messed up. But I was wondering if anybody, you know, if they know where I could get one, please get in contact with me. That's not expensive.
So
I can find one. Yeah.
There you go. Wow. Well, we have a caller from area code 804 on the line.
Uh-oh.
804. May we ask who's calling?
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hey, you
may
doing?
We ask who's calling?
Oh, Khufu from Richmond, Virginia. Khufu
Usia.
Yay!
Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing great, but I don't like how my people being propagandized with this Judaism and these three dirty religions. I just don't like how they playing into that. You know.
Thank you.
And see, this is a subject that needs to be week in and week out talked about and whatever. Because we need to get it out of our lives.
Right.
And,
I mean, we need to talk about it all. And even though we focus primarily on Christianity, you know, you do have Judaism and you do have, you know, Islam. Right. And I speak on Christianity and Judaism because those are the two that I'm most familiar with. And even though, you know, with Islam, you know, I've done some studying and some reading, and you won't even go into my background on that. But it's interesting, you know, how this comes about. But basically, at the end of the day, we present proof, facts, and evidence that the events never happened, it never transpired, and how people are enslaved psychologically and emotionally to these different religions and to show them how, you know, and see, that's where, you know, with me, where the conflict comes in for me personally, because I know quite a few and have friends and families that are very much into religion, and I understand their backgrounds, I understand their hurt, their pain, I understand all of that, and in some cases, this is all that they have to hold on to. And so I just think it's very dangerous for us to try to go in and rip it from some of these people. But you just present evidence, information here and there with the hope that they will one day turn around and do the research on their own. But if you're dealing with someone that's dealing with a lot of personal anguish issues, and, you know, that's the reason why I think it's important for those of us in the free thought community to get out there and start providing alternatives, because if these people are, you know, experiencing hardships, whether it's emotional hardship or financial hardship or, you know, a psychological hardship, we have to find ways to redirect them to resources that can help them, because in some cases, you know, there are resources out there. There is help, but people don't know about it. So the only thing that they know is what they've been taught, and that is to pray about it, God will provide, and then when, let's just say someone in leadership or in that ministry provides an answer and that this person didn't know, then they start looking at that person as, you know, a savior-like type of person, and that starts presenting some of the issues that we've talked about, you know, today and in the past. And it's just the whole thing. It's mind-boggling, because you'll hear some of these people say, you know, don't see the man in me, see the God in me. Knowing that with some of these people and the way that they think, and sometimes with the brain, how things get mixed up, people see that person as God. You know, they're not seeing necessarily the God in that person. They're seeing that person as God, as their savior, because they help them to pay their gas and light bill, in which they didn't know or understand that it's a federal program that, you know, enables these churches to help them with their gas and light or help them with their rent. And, I mean, I've heard countless stories of people going to the church that they've been a member of 10, 20, 30 years, several generations, you know, deep. And things happen, especially with this latest economy. People have been losing their jobs, their homes, you know, everything. And some of them have gone to their churches asking for help. And they've been told to pray about it, let God provide. Or if they were given help, basically, in some cases, they were set down from whatever ministry that they worked in and told that they were not being a good steward over God's money. So they had to sit them down. In some cases, they just weren't given anything. They were just turned away. So if you've been paying tithes and offerings, you know, membership dues, you know, to these churches all of these years, and they couldn't help you with $1,000 to help cover your bill for a month, maybe two, and that's what I don't understand, because people keep going back, which is why we talk about Stockholm Syndrome and all of these different things. You know, people are returning back to the same people that have abused them and making excuses for them.
Exactly.
So, it's just interesting, you know, and that's why I just tell people, present the evidence.
The same people that put them in
sometimes
slavery.
Sometimes you have to be kind. Go ahead, dear.
I would just say the same people that put you in slavery, you know.
Right.
We would still be in slavery. You know, I realize the government is too big and screwed up, right? But I feel if the church was in here, we would still be on the plantation, man. They would still be marrying, they'll still be marrying women, that's little girls 12 and 14 years old. Because that was cool with them. You know.
Right.
All that stuff would still be going on.
It's interesting, you know, I can't even begin to imagine what would happen, but, you know, going back to, you know, when the slaves were emancipated. Basically, the slaves were not freed because Lincoln thought it was a good idea. The slaves were freed as a punishment. And Civil War was not necessarily fought over slavery. It was fought over economics. But, you know, again, going back to history and looking all of that up, because the very next day after the slaves were emancipated, Lincoln was drunk, and he ordered them back into slavery. And there was even an article, I had to find an article and I'll post it, but about how Lincoln had written an article to a newspaper and saying that he didn't necessarily want to free the slaves, but basically it was done as a punishment. So, you know, the whole thing is interesting how that goes about. But again, you know, I always talk about bringing it up to date in modern times. And how there are people now, you know, very much so enslaved, you know, psychologically, even though they may not have shackles around their ankles, you know, or their hands, they're enslaved mentally. So the shackle is around their brain and around their emotions.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll hear people say, you know, one of the arguments that I've heard was, if it wasn't for God and religion, that we would still be enslaved.
Uh-oh.
And that's not true.
Mm-mm.
That's not true. And so, I don't know. You know, we just have to get better at this. We have to present more to people, allow people to ask more questions. It's just interesting how all of that comes about. And Rob says he works in mysterious ways, Kim. Slavery was a part of his plan. I don't know what kind of, you know, masochistic plan he had, but,
you
know, I don't want any parts of that. So, you know, it's just interesting, and, you know, but we're getting better. The information is getting out there. You know, the internet, the technology, one of the best inventions to ever come about. One of the best inventions to ever come about. And I can only hope that, you know, these shows and the information that we share and we disperse with people, I'm hoping that it's helping somebody.
And
I'm
you know what?
That it's educating somebody. Yes, dear.
And they even tell that congregation, they don't even want them to get on the internet.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Exactly.
That's how
exactly.
They know the deal. They don't want you to know nothing.
Right. They'll tell them that the internet is evil and you can't believe, you know, what you're reading on the internet and all of that, you know, and it's just, it's absolutely amazing. But what I will say is that, you know, a lot of the Christians that I have come across, you know, and discussed some of this with them, that most of them are very congenial, most of them are very, you know, amicable, if you will, and, you know, most of them are a joy to talk to. Now, it's the ones that try to talk loud, try to talk over me, that don't want to discuss anything. That lets me know that they don't really have any information or evidence. Mm-hmm. And just because you talk loud or talk over someone, that does not make you right. It just makes you obnoxious. That's what it makes you. So, and we'll never get anything done if we continue to yell at one another, if we continue to point fingers at one another, we continue just that, you know, self-destructive behavior. Because really there is no us versus them. It's we. It's us. And we have to live together side by side, and we have to find a way to live together and bring change and evolve. Because, again, you know, a lot of non-believers and atheists don't necessarily want to hear this, but I believe this to be a truth. And what I believe is, in order for us to remain viable in our community, particularly the Black community, we're going to have to work with the religious community. We don't really have a lot of choice there. And the reason why I say that is because they have the bully pulpit. They have the ear, the heart, and the mind for the people. So we're going to have to work with them. That doesn't mean that we have to believe what they say. Like they say, they hate the sin, but they love the sinner. So in turn, we can hate the belief, but still love the believer. Makes logical sense to me. Mm-hmm. But
no, that's a better way than how I heard it earlier today. I heard, you know, I listen to a lot of atheist shows. I heard somebody say, you hate the stupidity, but you love the stupid person. And that's not a very polite way to say that. Yeah, but, you know,
not,
and you did. About 20 minutes ago, you tapped into my confirmation bias. Like, I gotta admit, I have that in me. Like, cause about 40 minutes ago, you put out the guilt, shame, and fear, and then you mentioned the prostitution going on in the church, and I'm like, that's running through my head: guilt, shame, fear, prostitute, because they guilt the boys about masturbation. You know, it's better to drop your seed into a whore than to drop it on the floor. And shame the women about enjoying sex. Even today, young college women, what do they do when they walk out the dorm room after sex? The walk of shame, they call it. They proudly call it that. And then, you know, that fear that you're going to burn in hell forever without your Jesus, fella. And then they got that going on right there in the church that, yes, you know, son, don't masturbate. Go, you know, pork that whore. You know, go do that, for lack of a better term. I said pork. Go have sex with that whore. You know, instead of masturbating and dropping your seed on the ground, go breed and, you know, get our numbers up.
Exactly, because I was just getting ready to tap into that, but you beat me to it. Yeah, it's about breeding. It's about, you know, offspring. It's about, you know, again, you know, even in the United States here, they used to have large families because it was an agrarian farming culture. So they had large families so that the children could help with, you know, the fields. And besides their slaves, you know, but for some of the families that didn't have slaves, well, in some cases, children, they considered their children, their possessions, chattel, slaves. But basically, you know, even then, you know, it goes back to something you were talking about earlier, about the tribalism. And yes, that's correct, with the groupthink and the mob mentality. And the same thing happens even now when you go to some of these churches. You say something about that pastor, have the congregation ready to whoop your tail, you know? Yeah. And it happens often. But, yeah, you know, that groupthink, and I've posted articles about groupthink and about mob mentality. But, you know, the interesting thing is that I don't necessarily attribute it to religion anymore, because I see the same thing on this side of the equation. You know, I've seen, you know, atheists, free thinkers ganging up on religionists and turning it into a sport. I just think it's wrong on both sides. And we need to learn how to use our words. We need to learn how to talk to one another how to enjoy one another, even in our disagreements. You know, not everybody is going to agree with you. And, you know, you can disagree without being disagreeable, if you will. You know, you can just hold on to whatever belief or ideology you have and walk away. But you can't force someone to believe, you know, as you believe.
Right.
So that's why I'm talking, you know.
I'm still wondering how Solomon could screw 200 concubines. I'm sorry,
200 concubines?
You know, he had 200 concubines. He had 200 concubines, and I forgot how many wives he had.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how you keep it fresh. You got somebody new.
But, I mean, come on now. That thing wear out in time. You know what I'm saying? I said, no, why? How could he do all? Some of them women had to go years without some. Right?
Well, but you have to remember, in that particular culture, women were not necessarily encouraged to enjoy sex. That's just starting to come around even in this country where
I would have been pissed.
Enjoy sex.
I would have been real pissed.
Right.
Oh, be quiet. I would have been pissed.
Right,
you were gonna give me mine. You were gonna give it to me.
So it's just it's interesting. Yeah, women are just starting to admit that they enjoy sex. You know, in that regard, you know, as far as being sex positive or what have you, you know, we're behind quite a few industrialized, you know, countries. But I mean, people enjoy sex. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with sex. There's nothing wrong with having sex. There's nothing wrong with enjoying it. There's nothing wrong with procreating. There's nothing wrong with any of those things. My thing is be responsible. That's my sticking point. That's my personal sticking point. Just be responsible.
You know, I've ended up in another few debates with some theists in this group right here. And the question was asked, you know what I'm saying, what's the difference between a woman having sex before marriage and a woman having sex with another woman? So that devolved into a debate about homosexuality, which all of them agree that because the Bible says it's an abomination, it's wrong, right? So then when you bring up slavery, and I'm like, well, the Bible says that slavery is cool, so I guess that means that's true then, right? Yeah, but you know what I'm saying, homosexuality, though, as though you never mentioned the slavery part. Let's only stick to the part we agree with. Let's ignore the part that kind of shows that, hey, this is kind of jacked up. Okay, so, you know, I've thrown a few rounds with them and everything, and they're going back and forth and whatnot, and they're sticking hardcore to this whole thing about what is, you know, saying what is an abomination, what is despicable, and they're all sticking to homosexuality, and then a few people might have mentioned premarital sex and everything like that. And stuff, you know, and I'm like, you just don't realize the only reason you got that whole premarital sex thing is because you had to ensure that that child was yours. I could cheat on my wife, but if you cheat on me, in some cultures I could kill you, and nobody could say anything about it. You know, but
right.
You know, they can keep all that mess, man.
Right. Right. It's interesting. It's interesting, you know, how, you know, all of that comes about. And, again, we're all growing. We're all evolving. That's why, you know, that's the one thing that I do love about this community on this side of the equation here is that basically people are encouraged to ask questions. People are encouraged to grow. People, you know, are even encouraged to admit that they made a mistake. Oh, my goodness. Have you ever tried to get a Christian to admit, or, you know, any religion, not just Christian, but to admit that they made a mistake or that they could possibly be wrong?
They won't admit it.
The closest you'll get is that I'll pray about it. I'll go talk to the boss.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
The only people as bad as them on that whole thing is conspiracy theorists.
I think his name is Hagee, Dr. Hagee. And he said he has a video, and it says they don't know and they don't want to know.
Right. I've heard that on so many different occasions. They don't know. They don't want to know. and they don't care. And the only thing that, you know, matters to them is that they are going to heaven and that they get to, you know, see, you know, their families again. And that's why I always pull out that scripture from Ecclesiastes 9:5. And, you know, it says here, for the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, and even the memory of them is forgotten. And, you know, their own Bible tells them that once you're dead, you're dead. You're not going to remember anything when you get to the other side. There is no other side, but for those that believe that there is, you're not going to remember that. And even the people on this side are going to forget who you are after, you know, a couple of generations. You know, and the pictures get lost or thrown away. You know, and it's just, I don't know. Anyway, so.
I do believe in spirit.
You do believe in spirit?
I do believe in spirit.
Okay. Okay.
I think we're more than just physical. You know,
mm-hmm.
I really do. I think we're more than just a physical body.
All right. Interesting. You believe there were more than just a physical body.
I think we made up more than just physical. That's all.
Oh, look, could I add on?
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Okay, now, you just mentioned John Hagin. Now, guess what? His mother was Jewish, so that make him Jewish, right? And guess who else's mother was Jewish? Gaddafi.
Yes.
Now,
yeah.
You know what would be a good add-on to this show? Veterans Today, Gordon Duff. And I think it was in the October archives. Bob Johnson did a nice article on Judaism, a threat to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And see, and if you look at America, you will see that, talking about the red states, the Republicans, the neocons, all them type people,
mm-hmm.
it's been indoctrinated with Judaism, and this thing has seeped so far into the military, every aspect. You know, I mean, if you look at this this whole Zionist thing, it either got you from the political side and the religious side, and both of them is dangerous. And
yeah.
See, and where this Judaism took a seep in into the minds of the military, these the same people that done stole eight hydrogen 500 kiloton bombs. They don't
find. All right. Well, the focus, you know, what I'm trying to focus on, you know, just in general.
I'm bringing it home. See, in the military, you got these people being indoctrinated with this Judaism, and they want end time events to play out because they for Israel, God chosen people, you know, and that's what breeds racism. Anybody who plays into that Israel thing, you playing into racism.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but the thing is that, you know, we can't necessarily just focus on Jewish people in Judaism, you know, if you will.
That's the threat. You got to look at Israel. Look at Israel from 1947. I mean, you know, they is a conglomerate. They's a whole threat. Now, when John Kennedy sent some inspectors over there to demolish them, they try to deceive Kennedy. They had a subterranean 6-level underground bio lab where they was cooking up, stealing the secrets from this country. Yeah.
But
you
know, again, but we across the board, you know, there are, you know, quite a few people that we need to look at and we need to question it. But we can't just focus on that one particular culture. And you know,
That's the threat, man. These people been stealing secrets. You look at Google.
All right. You know, but I mean, I can understand, you know, how, you know, perception is not necessarily reality. And what I can understand is, in many cases, you know, there has to be an enemy. This is how people think. This is how they're taught to think. But we can't just focus on this one particular culture or one particular group of people. But in addition to that, you know, with quite a few things and just kind of bringing it up to date, you know, there are quite a few of us that were enslaved, and there are some that are still enslaved to that religiosity mindset. But now that the information is out there, now that the facts and the evidence have been put out there for everybody to find, this information is no longer just in, you know, academia. You don't have to go to, you know, Ivy League colleges or seminaries or what have you to get this information. This information flows freely on the internet for you to peruse at, you know, any given time. You know, now we have to take some of the ownership back on ourselves, which is why I always say we can't necessarily, you know, point a finger at everybody else, and you can't say that the information wasn't presented, that the information that you didn't know, because we're putting it out here, and we're putting it out here for you to understand and for you to see it. Now, I understand it's going to take some people a little longer than others to come to that realization, but at the same time, you know, I just don't think it's productive. I think it's counterproductive for us to just point the finger at one particular culture. Because, again, you know, I'm not trying to persecute any particular group or anything of that nature. I'm just trying to present evidence as to why certain quote-unquote perceived truths are really not true. They're made up mythologies, revised narratives, all of that. So, you know, for the ones that are trying to go deeper and pinpoint certain groups, please feel free to inbox me your information and your evidence, and I'll look it over. But until such time, you know, the information and evidence that I have is not just a particular group. You know, to a certain degree, we're all to blame.
It's more complicated than one group. You're right about that.
Right. So, you know, so that's how it is. But, you know, again, we have our archives. We've done several shows on this, and, you know, we have more shows to come in the future regarding, you know, biblical history and, you know, talking about, you know, certain aspects of it. But, again, I put out quite a few links today, not only on Facebook and Twitter, but in the chat room as well. So I posted it to all three places, all the same links. So, you know, you can find it now. You will be able to find it on the Facebook page and on the Twitter feed. So I would encourage you to go and look at it that way. But, you know, it all boils down to, and I answered the question at the beginning of the show, did Moses exist? No. Did the Exodus happen? No. None of these things ever took place. And, you know, again, there's no archaeological evidence to basically support those particular arguments, and those that want to argue against that, you know, thank your own Christian scholars, because they are the ones that made everyone start questioning the authenticity and the veracity of the Bible. And so, you know, you started it, and now we're just, you know, supplying more and more information to support your original argument. You know, that's what I find interesting. You know, the original argument of a Christian as to the veracity and truthfulness of the Bible and the claims of religion. And we're just supporting their argument, but now they've backtracked. But that's a whole different other show and mindset there. But, you know, again, I thank each and every last one of you. I thank you for being a part of the show. I thank you all for, you know, allowing us to be a part of your life. We have Mario here on the show. His show is every other Friday. You know, more information forthcoming. But, you know, January, we'll be back on schedule. Raina's show will reconvene next January. and hers every other Saturday. And it's a lot more coming. Like I said, some great announcements next year. Some rearranging of some things next year. It should be interesting. It should be wonderful. But again, you know, those that are listening to the archives, I thank you. Those that are listening live, I thank you, as well as those in the chat room. And, you know, you know, it's interesting. Again, we have to learn how to talk to one another. We have to learn how to appreciate one another. And again, this is Black Freethinkers. We are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. We had William on the show, him and Alfred. Their show starts next year as well. So I wanted to make sure you all know about that, the barbershop. And I encourage you to read those links. I encourage you guys to continue to think for yourself, live your life, enjoy your life, and enjoy one another while you still have a chance to do so. And on that note, I am out of here. You all enjoy your weekend. I love you. Take care.
You too.
Question everything.
What you mean?
I mean literally. Think critically.